Introducing Ellie Weber, Tuesday morning, 9:01, Sefer Mitzvah 233 and 234, the Jewish Maidservant.
Okay, so I just made up the title, because I'm not sure. It's Amaha Ivriya, but even though normally we do one mitzvah a week, it's impossible to do these two mitzvahs separately, because there's so much overlap, and much of what we'll discuss relates to the interplay between the two mitzvahs that we will discuss today, both of which relate to what I called in English Jewish maidservants, which, as we'll see, isn't really descriptive at all. Let's back up for a second and pick up where we were before Hanukkah, which was the previous mitzvah, the mitzvah of Eved Ivri. And if you'll recall, we started off with the usual criticisms, or how could it be slavery in Judaism? What does it mean? And it seems so, what would you call it?
Un-American.
Pre-modern. Yeah, well, un-American in the sense that, like, now we're so moral, we would never have such a thing. And where we landed up was with the opposite conclusion. We landed up with the opposite conclusion, which in fact was that this was a form of advanced bankruptcy, in the sense that when a person either, it was very, very limited. It was limited to two situations. One, where a person was completely destitute and the only option he had was to sell himself. And the other was where he had stolen and couldn't repay. And in both instances, what we saw was that this was a mechanic for society to support him and allow him to get a fresh start. Ad kidei kach, that in the end, the master, so to speak, in air quotes, was obligated in so many ways to what we thought of was his servant, that we asked ourselves, who would want such a deal? Right? He has to give him a pension. He has to treat him better than he would treat himself. Right? We saw, like, interesting halachos, that if he has only one pillow, it has to go to the quote-unquote slave, not to himself. If the slave, again, the indentured servant is married, the master has to support him and his wife and his children. It seemed like it was really kind of a sanctioned form of charity. It was as far away from, you know, from being a servant and a master relationship as it could be. Okay? So that was, you know, that was the interesting conclusion we found from Eved Ivri. Now we move on to Amaha Ivriya, which is different than Eved Ivri, because Amaha Ivriya is never voluntary. And I'll explain why. The only person who can become an Amaha Ivriya, which is a female, again, I'll say female slave, but it's the farthest thing from it, but the only person who could do that is a Ketana. Now, a Ketana, meaning she's less than 12, now a Ketana can't really do anything. So how does she become an Amaha Ivriya? Via her father. Okay? Which, on the one hand, you know, sounds horrific. Oh my God, you know, the father sold his daughter, like, what could be worse than that? But again, when seen in context, we'll see that it's a way for the father to give his daughter something that he couldn't give her otherwise. Right? If you think about it in terms of, like, in the old days, you know, the only way you had no money, the only way your son could become anything was to make him an apprentice to someone. Benjamin Franklin was an apprentice to someone, right? It got him ahead in life. So it works that way for males. For females, it's slightly different, because it's obviously dangerous, right? Like, you know, women can be taken advantage of, and certainly little girls can be taken advantage of. So we'll need to sort out exactly what's going on here and why there are two separate mitzvot. Yes?
I think, like in bankruptcy law, perhaps, we're focusing now on the person who is bankrupt. But I wonder if it's not for society to allow business to continue. It's to pay the creditors. So
I use the word bankruptcy only because it was the easiest parallel I have.
But like, but that indebted intention. It's not that we're only nice to him. We want the creditors to get paid.
I understand what you're saying. I just disagree. Meaning, I think that in this context, it's so obvious that it's a way for the people to get paid, but they're not getting 100 cents on the dollar. The idea, now you could say in bankruptcy they don't either, but the idea here, the focus is completely on rehabilitating this person. It's not, you're right that there must be some way, you know, if he stole $100 from you, so now he becomes your indentured servant. So now you say to yourself, great, That's the benefit to the creditor. But now you have to take his wife and his kids, and you have to support them, and you have to find them a house to live in. None of this counts against the debt that he owes you. I just think most people would say, you know what, I don't want any part of this. I think the only people who do it are charitable people who want to give this guy a new start. Okay, what we need to do is read and focus on psukim that we've all seen before, but we blow through because they're complicated and they're difficult. But they're fascinating in terms of what they reveal about the Torah's philosophy and how the Torah deals with certain situations. So we're back in the beginning of Mishpatim, just to give you a sense. Mishpatim really is the beginning of Dinei Mamonos in the Torah, right? Yisro is Aseres HaDibros, and it goes straight into Ve'ela HaMishpatim Asher Sasim Lifneim, we pointed out before, Ve'ela with the Vav, to tell you that they're all one Torah. It's not just Aseres HaDibros and some other stuff that got into the book. It's all one thing. And so we started when we last did it, we started with the question of why would Eved Ivri be sort of the first basic mitzvah that the Torah gives after Aseres HaDibros? I think we figured out the answer is because it's not so much a case of Eved Ivri, it's society supporting its weakest members. Okay? So the continuation of Eved Ivri is the case of Amaha Ivriya. Okay, we're in the first source, Shmos Kar Chaf Aleph Pasuk Zayin. V'chi yimkor ish et bito le'ama. So that gives you the context. The only way a woman can become an amaha ivriya is if she's sold by her father. Now, lo teitze chitzeta avadim. Let's just try. The only way we can do this is if we try. What could the Torah mean that if you sell your daughter as a maidservant, lo teitze chitzeta avadim? Okay, so the rules, whatever the rules are that allow regular avadim to leave, don't apply to har. There's truth to that, but not exactly. But I just want to point out, the drashas that we'll see in Chazal are generated by the psukim. It's a strange way to say it, right? Lo teitze chitzeta avadim demands a drasha. What does it mean exactly, the Torah says? Does that mean she doesn't go out after 6 years? We'll see that's not true. Does that mean she doesn't go out after Yovel? We'll see that's not true either. Mm-hmm. So there's something we have to understand here. Let's go on. Pasuk Chet. Oh, you know what? Let's look at... The only way we're going to get anywhere is if we look at Rashi also. So let's try to do them together. Source number two, the first Rashi on the Pasuk we read. V'chi yimkor ishet bito la'ama. First Rashi tells us what everybody agrees to. Bikitana hakatuv medaber. The only situation in which there could ever be an Amaha Ivriya is a girl who's less than 12.
Against her will, I mean, she's over 12 because she agreed.
It can't happen. Well, there's another. It's not called Amaha Ivriya, okay? Lo teitzei kitzei tanak tovudu yachol afilu hevia simanim. Could it be that even if simanim means external signs of maturity? So could it be that you would be able to sell your daughter even if she was physically mature? Amrit kal v'chomer. The answer is no from a kal v'chomer. Uma mechura kodem l'kein yos abesimanim. The rule is, Rashi knows this from Chazal, the second a girl brings signs of physical maturity, she goes free. So if she goes free when she brings signs of physical maturity, obviously she can't be sold after she has signs of physical maturity. So now we know that Amaha Ivriya only applies in two situations. It needs two things. First, she has to be less than 12. Two, she has to not be physically mature. Okay? Back inside Pasuk Chet. Here's a strange Pasuk. Im ra'a be'enei Adonaha. What does that mean?
His eyes somehow.
Right. So do it in English. Bad in his eyes isn't an English
sentence.
He doesn't like her. Doesn't say why. Doesn't say how. We don't understand anything. For some reason he doesn't like her. Ashalo. How do you know? Imra abe na'adonah. Ashalo ye'ada. Anybody?
Doesn't want to marry her.
Right. Ye'ada ye'ud. It's a form of marriage, which we'll discuss. Okay? So how do I know that she doesn't find favor in his eyes?
Because
he doesn't want to do Yehud, he doesn't want to marry her. Which immediately makes us rethink this whole situation. Mm-hmm. Right? You go, wait, he got a slave and he doesn't want to marry her? Who marries a slave? what do you start to see here?
This isn't
a master-slave relationship to begin with. There was always an ulterior motive behind the father's desire to sell his daughter. And what's that?
Marriage.
It's like a hidden form of marriage. And you could see, you know, I don't want to say it's the exact parallel to apprenticeship. Apprenticeship. That's a word.
Stage.
What? Okay.
I have a question.
One second.
Yeah.
How does Benjamin Franklin get ahead in life? His father has no money. He gets a job, right? You have no money. How does your daughter get a good marriage? You basically sell her, right? Now, it could raise the question, can you do this against her will? We'll have to come to that. But the first thing you see is that Amaha Ivriyah is not a master-slave relationship. It's a hidden marriage relationship. Okay? So now something terrible happened, right? He doesn't want to do Yehud, which we'll see soon as a form of marriage. So then the pasuk says if he doesn't like her and he doesn't want to do Yehud, then Vehefta. What word? Vehefta comes from what word? To be Podeh.
Redeems her, sets her free.
Then he has to help. What does it mean that he would redeem her? We'll see. But what can't happen? La'am nachri lo yishol limachra bevigdoba. La'am nachri means? Right, so it could mean Goyim, well, in this case it doesn't. Okay, La'am nachri means different or other. So usually a nachri means a Gentile. But here it just means he can't sell her to anybody else bevigdoba, because that would be
treasonous to her.
To her. Why would it be treasonous to her?
Because he sort of took her on the condition that maybe they'll marry.
Because the father, forget her for that, the father obviously sold his daughter to this man with the intention that that man would become his son-in-law. To say in the most blunt way, right? That the master would marry her. So, in order to protect the daughter, you know, the father doesn't, it's not a case where the father says, I have no money, anybody who wants to marry her can marry her. He picked this guy, and he sold her to this master. So the pasuk says, if this guy doesn't keep his word, and doesn't marry her, he is then vehefta, he has to help redeem her, but under no circumstances can he sell her not to a Gentile, but to any nachri, means anybody else. Because mm-hmm. the father was willing to let her marry X, not anybody who X wants to sell her to. Mm-hmm. She does not become a piece of chattel who can just be traded from husband, from potential husband to potential husband. You see even here in the Psukim that there's a built-in defense mechanism, there are built-in protections for the girl who otherwise would have no protection because her family has no money.
This is a little girl.
It's an 11-year-old.
Being sold to a man who might be 40 years old. It's a little bit...
40 years old? Oh my God.
Well,
he's almost dead.
Almost 80 years old.
It sounds a little bit very Middle Eastern, among other tribes here.
I can't change history, which is, if you're an 11-year-old girl whose family has no money or debts or what have you, right? It's not a Disney movie, for the most part. You don't,
the
prince doesn't show up, you know, and you don't get to marry the prince. What I'm describing, and you know, you could be offended or not, what I'm describing is the Torah, I think, is trying to protect her and saying, yes, the father could pick out a husband for her, which is, you know, not the way it works in Disney movies.
She doesn't go into slavery if she's married.
Right, but she is protected because either this guy marries her or he has to release her in some fashion. And the last thing he could do is sell her to somebody. He's 40, that's bad, but the other guy's 80. Right? So I can't turn this into some romantic marriage. It's not. But it's pretty clear that the Torah is trying to protect her as much as possible.
In other words, when the father sells his daughter to the person, it could be to the family.
Give me a chance. We're just getting started. Let's look at Rashi.
Nachri can mean anyone.
Well, because I prepared. let's try. Okay?
There you go.
Rashi, source number 2. Im ra'a be'enei Adonai. Pasuk Ches. Rashi says, what does that mean? Shalom nisa'achein be'enav lekonsa. That he didn't like her enough to marry her. It's an interesting thing. Sometimes, I'll just make this linguistic point because it's fascinating. You know, im ra'ah be'enav adonai sounds bad. The word ra'ah be'enav adonai, so, you know, she did something wrong and he hates her. It doesn't have to be that way. When it says, Vayar Hashem ki sinua le'ah va'yiftach et rachma. Right? So everybody asks, what, Yaakov hated Leah? So the one answer is yeah, because she cheated him, right? But the other answer is no. Sometimes the Torah used the word sinua, or hated, just in relation. Rachel was loved, therefore, the Pasuk says in Kisete, I believe it's in Kisete, if a man has two wives, ha'achat ahuva ve'achat sinua, right? What, he loves one, he hates the other one? No, the answer is one is the favorite. Yeah. And to a certain extent, if one is the favorite, then the other one feels hated. So here to Imra Abe, now the Rashi says, it doesn't mean she did anything wrong, or there's something gone terribly wrong. Instead, he doesn't like her enough to marry her. That means that he saw her as Ra'ah. Okay? Asher lo ye'ada, shehayalo liya'ada, ulahachnisa lo leisha. Because the plan was, Yehud, we'll just use Yehud for now as a synonym for marriage. It's a different form of marriage.
What does the word actually mean?
Huh?
What does the word mean?
To like choose or to set aside, to be miya'ed, to like specify in some way. Okay? So, he was supposed to marry her and he didn't. V'kesef kniyata hu kesef kidusheha. Now Rashi tells us something else that makes it obvious. The amount that he pays for her, right? How do you get married? So the normal way that we do it, bizman hazeh, with kesef via ring, but it's with money. So where's the money? So Rashi says, that's what's going on. When he buys her as a maidservant, he's essentially paying for her to become his wife. That's why when he doesn't choose her, it's like he's reneging on the deal. Because it's true, they didn't shake hands and say, you know, she'll be. It's still his choice. But it was clear that the intent was the money that he was paying her father to be Konehar was really money that was going to be applied, essentially, to the marriage. Yes?
Can he give her to his son?
He can. We'll come to that in a minute. That's going to be another puzzle. But let's just go one at a time. Now, here I bolded these words in the second paragraph in Rashi because it's important. Kan romaz lecha hakatuv shem mitzvah b'yehud. Here Rashi says that the Torah hinted that there's a mitzvah of yehud. V'ramaz lecha she'nat zricha kiddushin acherim. You don't need a whole marriage ceremony. You don't need a band. You don't need a misada kiddushin. Yehud is a form. It's like an expedited form of marriage. It looks like you bought her as a maidservant, but essentially, you took her as your wife, you know, at some later stage.
Can you use her as a regular wife?
I don't care. That's the idea. I don't know how, what do you mean to use her?
I mean,
right away.
What does use her
mean? Yeah, Bill would not
sleep,
like that language
with her,
at all.
Sleep with her.
I think he means like right away. Can you just...
Yes, so yes, right when away. He does that, she becomes his wife. Yeah. Yes. Okay? But now back to the point.
She's 12.
Okay. Back to the point. Back to the point. Which is, remember, this is supposed to be a shiur in like Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam. But we haven't really bumped into a mitzvah. So now we've bumped into a mitzvah. Rashi says, this asher lo ye'ada, that's a remez to a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? So the mitzvah is the mitzvah of yehud. Meaning, there's a mitzvah of kiddushin, right? We've seen that before. It's a mitzvah to marry a woman. There is also a mitzvah of yehud, which presumably is a subset, or could have been a subset, of the mitzvah of kiddushin, or a subset of the mitzvah of amah ha'ivriya. There's another form. When you asked me before today, okay, how many forms of weddings are there in the Torah? So I would have said, well, there's kiddushin. There's anybody? Yibum. No, that's how you do it. Yibum is essentially a form of kiddushin, but with your former sister-in-law, right? And now there's a third, yehud, which is, you know, the way you would marry a maidservant. Okay? So that's good, and we'll see. That's going to be one of the misses in the Rambam. That's 330. That's 233. I just thought it'd be better to work with the background. Okay, so now, still, third paragraph in Rashi. If you don't do, you're supposed to do Yehud. You're supposed to marry her. What if you don't? Then vehefta. You have to help to be podeha. How does that work? Rashi says, yitain la makom lehaftot velatzeit. You have to give her an opportunity to redeem herself and to go free. Meaning the whole point was she was going to be your wife. You don't take her as a wife. Okay, you have to give her a chance to leave. Now, you don't have to lose all your money. How does it work? She'afhu, the master, misayeya bepidyona. He has to help with her redemption. Umahu makom shenotenla. How does he help? She'migareya mipidyona. Kimispar hashanim sheasta etzlo, kiilu hi schura etzlo. How does that work? The answer is, you bought her, the master, you bought her for 600 shekel, and there were 6 years until Shemitah. You bought her the year after Shemitah. So you do the, so Rashi says, what do? You do the math. You say, therefore, I paid 100 shekel for each year. So now, she becomes however old she becomes, and I announce that I don't want to marry her. So now I have to say, basically, I'm willing to let her go free if you give me the 300. She's been my maidservant for 3 years, so that's 300 shekel that I'm no longer owed because she earned that 300 shekel. Now, if you give me the last 300 shekel, I'll let her go free. Now, people ask, but that's just the math. How is that a mitzvah of the hefta? So I saw an interesting pshat, and it's useful, which is you pretend that 600 shekel over 6 years is 100 shekel a year. But a four-year-old girl is much less helpful than a nine-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. It's clear that that's the chesed that you're doing. Because if you did it, you'd go, really what I meant was 25 shekel for the first year when she's pretty useless, 50 shekel for the second, right? But he doesn't do that. He's not allowed to do that. He has to do the math. It's just a simple mathematical equation. He divides by six, and he lets her go with whatever remaining payments are left to be made. Okay? Those will be the two mitzvahs we'll see in the Rambam. One is the mitzvah of Yehud. The other is the mitzvah of the hefta, of redeeming her. And obviously, then, they're alternate mitzvahs. You couldn't do both. Why couldn't you do both? Because if you marry her, she can't be redeemed, right? And if you redeem her, you can't marry her. So they're alternate mitzvahs, which is kind of a strange thing. You couldn't do both mitzvahs. You know, when you think, so you hear people say like, you know, oh, you should be zocher to do all tariag mitzvahs. No. The tariag mitzvahs are not doable by any one person at all. Even if that person was a Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael, all rolled into one, and right?
As well.
And there are things you don't want to do. No one wants to do all 613, but there, you can't do all 613. We'll see this in a second. What's this a parallel to? There's another marriage divorce situation that's very similar to this. We touched on it. Yibum and Chalitza. I mean, you can't do both mitzvahs, right? You could do, if you're a bizarre person, right, and you want to do as many mitzvahs as possible, okay, you could do the mitzvah of Yibum, you could marry somebody, and then you could divorce her to do that mitzvah. It's idiotic, but you could do that. But Yibum and Chalitza are either or. It's a one-shot thing, right? Your brother dies, God forbid, without any children. So either you do Yibum, you have to marry the widow, or you choose not to marry the widow, and you do Chalitza.
Hunter,
right?
Biden did both.
Huh?
Hunter Biden did both.
Hunter Biden. But he's not Jewish. Also.
Really?
Hunter Biden.
I know Hunter Biden.
He was
romancing
his brother's wife.
Really?
And
I didn't know that, but I will tell you this. You know how, you're not going to believe me, and I don't want to get into this, but you know how like most great stories begin, amongst religious people, most great stories begin, I was once at a shiva house, and I heard, okay, well, having just that shiva,
yeah.
I met a guy who just got married, I kid you not, for his 10th time.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
None of his wives died.
knowing divorce?
No, no. Well, yes and no, because he remarried a few times.
Oh, the same woman. Okay.
The second trust.
As a second wife, she's all
I'm
right.
Just,
that
I'm
must
just,
have been interesting.
If I say any more, I mean, you'll never be able to. You'll never figure out who this is anyway. But if I said more, it would just be Lashon Hara. But sometimes you're like sitting at a shiva and you go, this is like completely inappropriate because I'm having such a good time. Because the man, he's describing for me each marriage. And, right? Anyway, this thing happened. I'm not
so
making
it. The master gives back the money to the father. That's the master. The master is the one who gives back the money to the father.
No.
For the time that he didn't.
No, the father comes up with the money. The master got all... No, one second.
Yeah, the father, the master is going to...
question. Who's the family? Who gives the money to the master?
So, what's that? The master has 600 shekels.
Right.
Right? So now, right, so
which
he has
to
give
father.
Back...
He's getting back. The time of this girl.
Right, so he has to give back. He has to give back proportionate, I
right.
suppose.
To the father.
To the time.
Amateurs.
To the father,
so
correct.
The father
yes.
Board.
Okay,
yeah, that's what I wonder about this.
I can't think... Selling my daughter or something.
You're a good man. You're a good man. Okay.
I can't.
Okay.
We're not.
Good. So let's be clear. First of all, you may not be been listening totally, because let's say you knew a guy and he seems lovely and he's rich, and let's say that's obviously not the case. Let's say you had no money whatsoever, right? Would you think it was great to marry your daughter off
no,
to this man?
No, I would never sell my daughter.
Now who said sell?
We're not selling.
You keep saying sell. I didn't say sell.
He's selling.
I keep saying that so you'd pay more attention. No. What I'm saying is, what if it's a secret marriage? Right? And now you're getting this great husband for your daughter, and you'd never be able to get that husband otherwise, but the method through which you do it is called Amah Ivriya. That's not so bad. You're right. Listen, let's be clear also, we've made this point before, we'll make it again. It's not clear that the Torah wants any of this to happen. Mm-hmm. You're in this situation, right? Almost all, like, anybody who writes a real legal code realizes that it's all b'di'eved. Meaning, all your focus is on bad situations. When these things happen, you don't want any of them to happen in the first place, right? You go, you know what, we're not going to have any traffic laws. In this place that I'm making up, we're not going to have any traffic laws because there's never going to be any traffic accidents. There'll never be any... Yeah, that's what you hope for. But then the first day, you know, X hits Y and somebody needs to know what's the law. Right? So that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. Okay. Now, everybody asked, so let's go to Pasuk Test. Right? Pasuk Test is a great example of something like we don't really focus. We have some vague idea that the sun plays some role in this. Yeah, it's a Pasuk. Ve'im livno ye adana. As simple as that. Instead of him marrying her, because he's 40, now he lets his 20-year-old son marry her. That's better. Now we're getting like the Disney movie, right? Not the old king, it's the handsome prince. Ve'im livno ye adana, kin mishpat habanot ya'asela. Okay, let's try that. If the son marries her, kim mishpat habanot ya'asela. What does that mean?
Like marriage to me.
Meaning, he has to, that's a fair translation. He should treat her like his wife. Mm-hmm. And how do I know that that's true? So first of all, let's go back. Rashi, pasuk test. Ve'im livno ye adana. Who can do that? Ha'adon, the master. Okay, it's his choice, him or his son. Milamed, it teaches you. She'af bino kam tachtav li'ada. That it doesn't matter. The son also can step in and marry her. Now, why is that necessary? Because you might have thought, la'am nachri lo yimshol l'machra b'vigdova, no one else could marry her. The answer is no. The Torah says there is someone else who could marry her other than the master. Who's that? His son. Okay? Let's just finish the Rashi.
He can't pick any other candidate.
No.
Can that be your version?
She'af b'no kam tachtov liyada im yirtze aviv. Ve'eino tzarich lekatsha kidushim achim. Here's the technical chiddush. You might have said, okay, the Adon got the money, so he's halfway married to her anyway, and all he has to do is sleep with her, and that completes the wedding. But the son, no, he needs a photographer and a caterer. He needs all the ceremony. So Rash says, no. The point is, whatever applied to the father applied to the son. when it's almost like, and it's bizarre, but it's almost like she's kind of married to multiple men, right? Because when the father buys her, and he has five sons, okay? So technically speaking, she could be married in this procedure to any one of six people, the father and the five sons. Okay, she's not. But she could be, all of that is part of the plan.
Could she be part of a Yerusha?
What do you mean?
Does the father pass away?
That's a good question. I don't know. My guess is without having seen it inside, no. Because she's not chattel. And I think when he dies, she goes free immediately.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right? The dead, just like, you know, when your husband dies, you know, the brothers, you know, when your husband dies, you go free.
Yeah, but she's...
I'm relatively confident in my answer. It's a fair question, but I'm relatively confident. Okay. Well, so now, how does he marry her? We're back in Rashi and Tet. Ella Omer la hareat miyu edetli bekesef shikibel avich bidamayich. The son says to her, you're married to me with the money that your father received from my father. Okay, which means, by the way, no. Stupid me. The Adon gets money back when he redeems her.
Right. I mean, he paid the father.
He paid the father. Right, right. I got that completely wrong. Right, he paid the father. Right. Now presumably the father spent the money.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You know, he had all these debts.
Right.
So now he has to come up with money to redeem his daughter.
Okay.
The Adon helps, but the Adon, as best I can tell, doesn't have to actually shell out any money from his pocket.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now, so if the son marries her, she's a regular wife. Kimishpat habanot. What does that mean? Rashi says she'er kisut ve'ona, which is the next pasuk. What's she'er? Anybody know? That the three things that every husband is chayev to his wife.
What, food, clothing, and
she'er is like support.
Yeah.
Kisut is clothing.
Yeah.
Ona, a marital relation.
Marital satisfaction.
Okay. Imached yikachla. So then. Then the next pasuk yud back on top tells us the following: Imacher yikachlo, either the father or the son takes on another wife. Okay,
yeah.
In those days it happened.
One, yeah.
So now the problem is we're worried for her because she's a regular wife, but he got her in a less respectful way. So the Torah is worried about her. So what happens? The Torah says clearly, Sheira kitsuta va'onata lo yigra. He's still chayev to her, meaning he can't abandon her. Just because he found somebody better, he can't abandon her.
Right.
Okay? He has to keep supporting her in those same ways. Emotionally, I'm sure he does. Last pasuk, Yud Aleph. Ve'im shlash eila lo ya'asela. And if he doesn't do these three things to her, what are these three things?
Food, clothing, and marital relations.
So that's the simple shot, but that's not the answer. But that's how I would have said it also. That's the reading.
Okay.
If these three things does do to her,
v'yatsa'ach
chinam ein kasa. Then she leaves for free, she doesn't have to be redeemed, he broke his contract, she gets to go out for free. Now,
does she get a get?
That's a good question.
Because if she just goes and he doesn't.
So, but the question is, what are these three things?
Okay.
So now look in Rashi, Yud Aleph, right?
Yeah.
Rashi says, "V'im shlosh eila lo yaasela, im achat mishalosh eila lo yaasela." If he doesn't do one of these three things, what are the three things? Umahein hashalosh. One, yiyaden alo.
Okay.
He takes her as his wife.
Yeah.
Two, olivno. The son takes her as his wife. Three, o yigara mi pinyana v'teitze, or he allows her to be redeemed. Then, v'zeh lo yada lo v'lo livno v'hi lo haya biyada liftot et atzma. Then, v'yatsa'ach chinam ein kasef. Bottom Rashi, riba lo yitziya lezo yoter mimasher riba la'avodim. She has many, many more ways to be released as a maidservant than does a regular servant. Umai ha'itzia, l'lamedcha she'teitze b'simonim, v'tishe imo ad she'tavi simonim. What's the answer? The answer is, he has three obligations. Okay? One is he marries her. The second is his son marries her. The third is he helps her to redeem herself. Says the Torah, if he doesn't do any of these three, then as soon as she shows any signs of physical maturity, she leaves without paying, you know, he loses all his money. He had planned to, you know, she shows signs of physical maturity at 10, he had planned to keep her till 12, his loss. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, you now see something very, very interesting also, which is, if he doesn't marry her, you know, he loses her. If he marries her, he keeps her. She just becomes his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There, you know, there are interesting motivations on either side. But what Rashi makes clear, and now we'll see it in the Rambam, is that there are three obligations that he has, but the three are really two. Because one obligation is Yehud, marriage, which can be done either by him or by one of his sons. And the other is, if you don't do that, you have to help her redeem herself. And now we'll see that the Rambam counts each of those two as separate mitzvahs. Which is interesting. Well, of course, let's look at them separately. Look at source number three. Here's the Rambam, Mitzvah Reish Lamed Gimel, 233. V'hamitzvah Reish Lamed Gimel, hi shetzivanu lisa amaha ivriya im adoneha shekana oto obino. It's a mitzvah saseh min ha-Torah, says the Rambam, for the master to marry the maidservant. Okay, now, is it an obligatory mitzvah saseh? You know, can we force him to do it? I don't know. But it's interesting that it's its own mitzvah saseh. Let's continue. V'zoti mitzvat yiyud. This is the mitzvah of, you know, marriage between a master and a maidservant. U'b'biur amru, mitzvat yiyud kodemet l'mitzvat pidiya. What does this mean? Well, there are two mitzvahs. One is marriage. What's the other mitzvah?
Redeeming
her. So the Rambam said, but it's clear, the primary mitzvah is to marry her.
If you don't,
then there's a separate mitzvah of redeeming her. Okay? Mitzvah Yud Kodemet L'mitzvah Pidiyah La'omro Yitzaleh Asher Lo Ye'ada. If you don't do Yud Ve'hefta, then you redeem her. Vida. And know the following. Shedin Eved Ivri V'din Amaha Ivriya Eino Noheg Ela Bizman Shehayovel Noheg. Okay? This whole idea of maidservants only applies when there's a yovel. Now, that means it only applies when there's a shemitah, meaning the idea of going free in the 70th year and the 50th year applies, but it might be more than that. It might be that it only works when the whole system of Jewish law applies. When there's no when ownership of fields returns, when ownership of homes returns, it could be that this thing only works. I'm making this up, but I think it's true.
Well, like shemitah. It's not to write it until there's yovel.
Yes, what I'm saying is, this has nothing to do with shemitah and yovel. Right? You can just count to 7 or count to 50.
Right.
It could be that the whole system of social justice needs to be applied together, because otherwise there'll be too many loopholes. That in a society in which people can't amass massive wealth, right? Because land ownings return at Shemitah, they return at Yovel, right? And everybody has some kind of family inheritance, everybody has some kind, you know, in that context, Amaha Ivriya would work. But on its own, it really wouldn't fix society in the way that we want it fixed. The one thing that's obvious is, if you marry her, obviously Shemitah and Yovel are off the table. You're married forever, until you die or until you divorce her. Okay? So, that's the first mitzvah.
Can somebody in the contract do this today?
There's no shemitah or yovel. What do you mean?
No, if the parents agreed and the little girl agreed, could someone loan their daughter to someone?
Say,
you know, here's a work contract.
No.
That you marry, that's the understanding.
No.
When she's a major.
Because I don't think that's the point I'm trying to make. I don't think this is the model of ethical behavior. This is a way to fix certain problems.
Yeah.
I believe, I don't know, is there a Gzeir Drabanan against marrying a Ketana Bizman Hazeh? I just assume there is.
Well, you wouldn't be marrying her, but you're taking her as your employee on the understanding.
Okay, but it doesn't. The answer is it doesn't exist Bizman Hazeh, so the answer is no. Let's do one more. The second mitzvah, just so we have them both in front of us, the Rambam. Source number 4, mitzvah Reish Lamed Daled. Va mitzvah Reish Lamed Daled. He shet sivanu liftot amaha ivriya. Right, that's the second mitzvah. Vehefta, you have to redeem her. Vu amaro yitzaleh vehefta. Ubemechilta, in the Medrash, the Medrash halacha, amru befeirush. Ve'im shlash eila lo ya'asela. Amru. Meaning, when it says ve'im shlashelo yasela, yours was a fair reading that it would refer to sheirak sutav onata. But the Medrash Halacha, the Tanaim, said that's not what it means, right? But I think you know your reading would have been fair. So what are the three? Yeyud for him, yeyud for his son, or pidyo. Okay, now. Here's an interesting situation. It could have easily been the case, if you asked me, we read the Pesukim, now we have some working understanding of the Pesukim, you say, what's the mitzvah of Amah HaYivriyah? I would have said, the mitzvah is marry her, and if you don't marry her, redeem her. But I would have seen those, who am I? I would have seen those as one mitzvah, with two options. Mm-hmm. And the Bahag sees it that way, and Rav Sadia Gaon sees it that way also. The Rambam chose not to see it that way, and everybody has the same question. Why is that? Right? Why did the Rambam say two different mitzvahs when essentially it's an either or in the same situation?
What's the Ibn Khalidza model? Is Ibn Khalidza one or two?
Ah, so we'll come to that in a minute. But before that, the Sefer HaChinuch, I think, is beautiful here and really helps to underscore the point I've been trying to make, which is not only isn't this misbehavior on the part of the father, when you're lacking options, this is a pretty merciful thing for society to do. Well, let's see. Mishar she mitzvah zo, says the Chinuch, the rationale for the mitzvah of Yehud is as follows. Sherichem hakel al ha'aniyah hanimkeret. God has mercy on the poor girl who's being sold. Va'al aviha shenitzarech lemachra. And mercy on her father who has no choice but to sell her. Here you get your first hint that this isn't lechatchila. Right? Nobody wants this to be the usual way that girls get married. But when you have no choice, the Torah had mercy. Vitziva hakoneota lisota liishava laasota gveret. Right? The person is commanded, if he buys her, to make her his wife and to make her the mistress, you know, of the, I don't know, the plantation, if you think of it that way. The way the Chinuch presents it is, the father's out of options. He can't feed his daughter, he doesn't know what to do, he can't do anything. So really, what he would do is, he would just sell her. But the Torah doesn't want him to sell her. So the Torah says, I'll only allow you to sell her to somebody who's going to marry her. And so therefore she'll turn immediately from being like some poor nothing to being the mistress of, you know, a Whiteacre or whatever the name of the plantation is.
There was no minimum requirement for this master to actually marry her to his son, avoiding this whole maidservant. I mean, it was a really nice, you know.
Yeah, but nobody knew, right? But she's 8 years old and no one wants to commit. Huh. And no one's really sure. Right? There is an explanation. Vitzivag, mm-hmm. Okay. Second on the middle, Kikeo Rachum V'chanunhu. It's so interesting that we think of this as being like, you know, a mean, merciless way of running society. And the Chinuch says, no, this is the most merciful thing you could do. God is saving this person from a life of poverty. V'im ein ha'koneh chafetz bala atzmo, she'isa anulivno. If he doesn't want to marry her, fine, so let his son marry her. Kigam im ben adoneh tismach v'tagel. That's a really interesting line. It says the Chinuch, marrying the son of the master is also a promotion. You know, it's a big deal. It's like marrying Hunter Biden. You know, his father's the vice president, but, you know, he's got something. Okay, he has connections in the Ukraine, apparently. Okay?
Big ones.
Kigam im ben adon. Okay. Oh, now, what if they don't get married? Or he helps her to go free. Okay? So it's almost like, the way the Torah presents it, it's almost like there's a great option, and then there's the fallback option. The great option is she goes from being poor to being the mistress. of the plantation. If for whatever reason they don't want to marry her, so she goes free. You know, so it's pretty risk-free, the whole proposition. Now, second paragraph in source number 5. V'ha'over al-zeh v'lo ye'adah. Now, this is very interesting. He doesn't do it. He's supposed to marry her, but he doesn't marry her. Lo-lo v'lo livno. He doesn't marry her, the son doesn't marry her. And on top of that, v'lo si'ea b'pidyona, and he doesn't help her to be redeemed, to go free. Lo kiyem mitzvah zo. Okay? He was not mekayim this mitzvah. But look, watch what he says now. Aval ein lechofo lefi hadome al kiyum zo hamitzvah. But we don't force him to do it. Normally the rule is Bezdin steps in and forces you to do the mitzvah. Why don't we force him to do the mitzvah? Sharei katuv sham b'feirush. Ve'im shlosh e lelo ya'asela. If he doesn't do any of these three things, michlal. Fascinating. This, I think, is the first example of a type of pseudo-mitzvah. Meaning, if you do it, you get a mitzvah. If you don't do it, I'll say it in my terms, you're not mevatel a mitzvah. The Torah wants you to behave this way, and if you behave the proper way and you marry her or you redeem her, you get a mitzvah. But if you don't, you didn't violate the Torah. Right? It's a unique category. Normally, let's look at mitzvah. Normally, it becomes binary at some point in time. By which I mean, it's Sukkot morning, right? And you go, I don't want to take a lulav. Well, you can wait till later. But now there's 1 minute left to the day. In this 1 minute, either you take a lulav, and you're mekayim a mitzvah saseh, or you don't take a lulav, and you're mevatel a mitzvah saseh. And that's, vaguely speaking, a punishable offense. Bezdin, in theory, can force you to take a lulav. Right? Now, there are mitzvos that are circumstantial. Meaning, you spend the day at home, nobody comes and asks you for tzedakah. So the way I see it, you didn't get a mitzvah tzedakah, of course, because you didn't give. But you weren't mevatel a mitzvah tzedakah, because you didn't have an opportunity to do it. Okay? How does it normally work? Somebody comes to the door and says to you, I need 10 shekel. I'm starving. I need 10 shekel for supper. You have a 10 shekel bill in your pocket, and the guy's telling the truth, and you know it. In that moment, you either mekayim a mitzvah saseh of tzedakah, or you're mevatel the mitzvah saseh because you didn't give him the tzedakah. Here, we bump into this new category of mitzvos, which is, if you do it, you get a mitzvah saseh, but if you don't do it, you were not mevatel, you didn't mevatel in English.
Nullify.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. You didn't nullify a mitzvah taseh. This, I think, is the first category of a mitzvah that we've seen in this strange way, which makes it like a weaker kind of mitzvah taseh. It's almost like the Torah went out of its way to tell you it wants this type of behavior, but according to the Chinuch at least, it won't enforce this kind of behavior. And now anybody could say any theory they want here, and I don't have a better theory than what you have. It seems like the Torah is trying to build an ethical, just society, but there's a limit to how forceful the Torah will be in that way. And so the Torah says, yeah, we want you to marry this woman because otherwise she'll be destitute and she doesn't have many other options, but we're not going to force you to do it. We're not going to force you to do it, in fact, so long as you help to redeem her. And if you don't help to redeem her, you're not doing what the Torah wants, the Torah doesn't like your behavior, but we're not going to force you to do it, because there's a line that we're not going to cross. Again, I don't know more than to just point out the obvious, that according to the Sefer HaChinuch, not the Rambam, but according to the Sefer HaChinuch, it's a quasi-mitzvah saseh. It's quasi in that if you do it, you get the mitzvah saseh. If you don't do it, you weren't mevatel, you didn't nullify a mitzvah saseh.
And according to the Rambam?
The Rambam doesn't say anything about this. According to the Rambam, it seems like it's a regular mitzvah saseh. Let's just finish the chinuch. Last full line. In the middle. Umikalmakam imasakein kiyein mitzvah va'asak karaui. You got the mitzvah and you acted appropriately. V'tavo alav bracha. Now the chinuch is like, now he's just being, you know. Tavo la bracha, he's like a Sephardi guy. He's giving ubanim tovim uksheirim ruim latzeit mizivugam. Wow, and you know, great children, if you do it, great children will come, you know, from your marriage. It really is just like Eved Ivri is a business relationship. It is a maaseh chesed dressed up as a business relationship, right? Amma ha'ivriya is the same thing, but it's an even bigger chesed because she's going to become your wife. It's like marrying a poor woman just to save her from, you know, from her destiny, from being poor. It's really a fantastic thing. But okay.
Sometimes, there's, you know, if you don't take up a lube in that drug, you're really over miss what I say.
You violate, right.
You violate. You don't marry her, but you have a reason. There's some kind of suspicion here that it sounds like a little dangerous.
First of all, you're a suspicious person by nature. Okay? But there's a way out. Meaning, you're right. Then, im lo ye'ada ve'hefta. Then help her be redeemed, and help her go free.
No, but everyone's going to wonder, like, you know, why didn't he marry her?
Look, it might be the same thing. Let's go to the example you want to talk about it. And maybe it goes back to the pasuk. When we read it, it was jarring. Im ra'a be'enei adonah. Yeah. Right? That sounds like he really did, it's exactly what you're saying, I hate to say. Which is, it sounds like he saw something wrong, and people might talk.
Yeah.
But the Torah lets him get away with it. Like what situation? Yibum and Chalitza. So, where did the Rambam get this idea that it's two separate mitzvahs? So, everybody points to the following Mishnah. Source number 6. The Mishnah in Bechoras Yudgimel Amud Aleph says, Mitzvat Yi'ida Kodemet LeMitzvat HaPidiya. What does that mean? The Torah really wants you to marry her. Right? If you don't marry her, the Torah gives you an out by way of redeeming her. But what words does the Mishnah use? Mitzvat Yi'ida. The mitzvah of Yehud is kodem to the mitzvah of Pidia. So most people point to this as the source for the Rambam. Why is it not one mitzvah, this or that? Because the Mishnah refers to them as independent mitzvahs. Mitzvat Yi'ida, mitzvat Pidia. And the Mishnah then quotes our pasuk. Asher, because it says Asher lo ye'ada, if you don't do yid ve'hefta, then you redeem her. And now just the mitzvah gives another case. The Mishnah gives another case that's similar. Mitzvat hayibum kodemet le'mitzvat chalitza. Okay, if your brother dies, what the Torah really wants is for you to marry your sister-in-law. That's the right thing to do. If for whatever reason you don't choose to do that, then you could do the mitzvah of chalitza. And here too, there are two separate mitzvahs, right? Either do yibum or do chalitza, just like either do yiud or do pidyon. But now the Mishnah says something interesting, which I don't want to get too much into, but it's just an interesting side point. The Mishnah says, Barishona shehayu mitkavnim l'shem mitzvah. Now, when does yibum come before chalitza? That's when people were tzaddikim. And they married their sister-in-law to do the mitzvah of Yibum, and not because she was a supermodel. But when that changed and people started doing it for not the right motivations, va'achshav she'ein mitkavnim l'shem mitzvah, amru mitzvat chalitza kodemet l'mitzvat Yibum. Right? That's a huge machlokas. We've talked about this before, but it's one of the most fascinating areas of halacha, where it just seems like the halacha changed. You read the psukim in the Torah, of course they want Yibum. Now, Yibum is prohibited in the state of Israel. Why? We're not religious, as a fight among Sephardim, but it has to do with the Chaim Dorabeinu Gershom and having two wives. But the bottom line is, the Torah only wants you to do it L'Shem Shamayim, for the mitzvah. Not because your sister-in-law is beautiful.
Right.
And you wonder if the same thing could apply in the mitzvah that we're talking about. You know, Yiyud is a form of marriage, but maybe it's a form of marriage that's a chesed, and you have to be wanting to do it, you know, for the chesed aspect of it. And if you're not on that madrega, maybe im ra'a b'nei adonai, now I'm darshaning, is not so much hard, but you. If you're bad, if you're unable to work up the motivation to say, I can save this girl by marrying her, and it's true, it's not romantic marriage, it's not the way we think of it, but it's a law that would help save her life, then don't do it.
Miyun is with the girls a minor.
Yeah, that's something else. It just
does
sounds
she have
the
a
same.
Life
now, what?
Can she back
so here, yeah, let's go quickly. So the Rashbam has a different source for exactly the same thing that we saw. It says,
Remember we had the phrase of being lo teitzik kitzeit ha'avadim? She doesn't go out like any other slave. What does that mean? Rambam says, the Rashbam says, b'sheishanim ela yikachana lo li'isha kimoshim mefaresh bo'lech. The source of marriage is not the word ye'ada. It's lo teitzik kitzeit ha'avadim. She shouldn't leave as another slave leaves because you're supposed to marry her. Okay? Two interesting halachos to finish with. The Rambam Hilchos Melachim Perek Dal Halacha Dal, source number 8, says as follows: V'chein lokeach mikol gvul Yisrael nashim upilakshim. Hilchot Melachim obviously has to do with rules of a king. So he says a king is allowed to take women from all over the land as pilakshim. What are pilakshim? So the Rambam explains: nashim biktuba v'kidushin. A full wife means you married her and you gave her a ketubah. Upilakshim, which will loosely translate as concubines, which I used to think was like a vegetable. Okay? Upilakshim below kituva ubelo kidushin. Ela biyichud bilvad konel to mutard lo. Basically just sleep together. And now she's his. Aval hahedyot asur bipilagesh ela bi'amaha ibriya bilvad achar yiyun. Here the Rambam drops a bombshell on us that, like, okay, let's now expand. We originally kiddushin, full marriage. What's the first cousin of that? Yibum, when you have to marry the sister-in-law. What's the first cousin of that? Yiyum. What's the first cousin of that? Pilagesh, for a king. So it makes you think that in the Rambam, Yiyud is a form of marriage, but not a complete marriage. Because if he compares a Pilagesh, right, there was, when I still lived in America, that's like 15 years ago, it was this fake thing. These fake scandals are good because they make people learn halacha. Remember a few years ago there was a thing, they were going to produce this Shabbos phone, a smartphone that you could use on Shabbos because it was all to be done through Grumma, and like everybody got all worked up about it. It was all a scam to just get people to learn halacha Shabbos. It wasn't such a thing. So 15 years ago, the Jewish Week had a big piece about a guy in Borough Park who had a pilegesh.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know? He's not reading the right newspaper. You know? And it generated this whole conversation about why, basically, it's like having a mistress.
Yeah.
But she can only sleep with you. Right? Yeah. The whole thing, there's a story. Rav Kanievsky, what's his first name now?
Yeah.
Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So his father was a Stipler. Right. Okay, he was like the Gadol Hador. I don't know if this is true, but it's a good story. You could go visit him in the old days. He was tall, but he was very stooped over and hard of hearing. And so mostly you wrote things to him, and he would read it. So a guy came to see him and wrote a page justifying the use of a pilegesh bizman hazeh. And the story is the stipler got up slowly and took an umbrella and started hitting the guy. From which we can conclude that he disagreed. Okay, last one. Source number 9. The Rambam says in Perek Dal Halacha Ches of Hilchos Avadim, Ein ha'adon mi'a'ed amaha ivriya. You cannot marry the amaha ivriya lo, not for the master, v'lo livno, ela mida'ata. She has to consent. She has to consent. Afa pisha kfar kibel avia ma'utel, sharei hu omer ye adam mida'ata. Fascinating. The master goes, what do you mean? I paid you. Right? I gave the father the money. The answer is no. It's a form of marriage, and marriage is not done by al-karcha. So even in a case of a destitute girl whose only way out, you know, is to marry this guy, in the end, if she doesn't want to do it, basically she's reneging on the deal and he has no options.
Is that before she has Simanim?
Because well, Simanim, she goes. Simanim, then she could marry her if she wants, but it's not Yehud. Okay? Anyway, it's a hodgepodge of fascinating halachos. I'm afraid that next week we have to do Eved Kenani. And we're going to have real problems with that. But, you know, we're not cowards, and we'll do our
best. Thank you, brother.
Oh, wait, you know what? I want to do this. Hanem Rakash Yom Rasa Kadosh Baruch Hu Zakis Tro Lefika Hirba Lev Tro Midiyah Nemar Adonai Chafetz Tumaz Kato Yagil Tom Yadir Yishkadeh Yishkadeh